Hi, I'm Susie Larson. Here's the podcast from Middays with Susie Larson. Enjoy the conversation. It's only just a matter of... Welcome to Middays. I'm Susie Larson. So honored to have you listening today. I look forward to bringing you conversations every single day that hopefully inspire you in your faith walk, that deepen your understanding of God's Word, and that heighten your awareness of His very real presence in your life. Well, my guest today writes this. He says, running away from pain or ignoring its existence doesn't make it go away. Rather, it changes forms. Unaddressed tragedy becomes addiction, numbness, over-spiritualizing, or artificial placidity. When we run from our deepest pain, it will define us in ways we never imagined. We must have the courage to run toward the pain. If you listen often enough, you know I'm an advocate of lament and grief, and this is an important and often missing element in the church today. And you know I love the church, but we as God's people need to make room for those who are grieving. It's messy. We need to enter in to the mess without platitudes and ill-timed Bible verses and, you know, advice to rush people through the process. It's messy. You can't sprint through it, though. This message today isn't for everybody, but I think it is. It's for those who are suffering or those who love those who are grieving. I pray you'd all stay tuned and listen because we need to be equipped, better equipped on how we handle lament. Andrew Bauman joins me today. I've had him on the show before. Boy, his brilliant book, Stumbling Toward Wholeness, was just, we had an excellent conversation. Today, we're talking about his book, A Brave Lament, written by he and his wife, Christy Bauman. And we've got four copies to get into your hands. I would love to get one into your hands. You know the drill if you listen often enough. You text 877-933-2484 or email middays@myfaithradio.com. A couple quick announcements for you. You haven't heard me pitch the live event with Dr. Troy. The theme of the night is the healing power of hope. Because it's sold out right away. Their tickets are free, and there's now a waiting list we've started. The thing I want to say is if you grab tickets and you're not sure you can make it, please, please be honorable. If you find out you can't make it and call the ticket office, and you'll find that information on the homepage because others want those spots. This is going to be a really important night. I'm looking forward to it. It's sold out fast, just as we thought. I'm hoping to do this again in about 6 months in a bigger room so we can accommodate more people. Also, we're giving away one every week, the gorgeous hardcover He Reads Truth Bible. It's beautiful. Those big hardcover Bibles are expensive, and I'm just so grateful here at Faith Radio. We're giving away one every week. All you have to do is get on our website, myfaithradio.com, and register to win. All right, let me tell you about my guest. Andrew and Christy Bauman reside in Seattle, Washington. They're lovers of beauty and all things wild. They're both therapists, writers, teachers, and sufferers. You can follow their work at abravelament.com. And Andrew, we're so honored to have you back with us today. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. So glad to be here and have this important conversation that I'm incredibly passionate about.
Yeah, well, I'm looking forward to it as well. And you know this as you've been on with me before. We love to start out every day talking scripture. I know, Andrew, you love God's word. Is there a verse you've been thinking about these days you can share with us?
Yeah. As I thought about it, Romans 12:15 came to mind, which is the classic verse, rejoice with those who rejoice and mourn with those who mourn. And this conversation that we're having today, it feels so appropriate to know that grief and joy are on a continuum, that they're forever conjoined. And the deeper we learn to grieve is the deeper we will learn to joy. And if we block that grief, if we deny it somehow, if we try to escape it, we're actually blocking our capacity to experience God's goodness in a deeper, more fuller way.
Mm. Amen. Amen. I wrote a book called Fully Alive, Learning to Flourish Mind, Body, and Spirit. I've interviewed doctors, brain scientists, and the like, and I did a whole chapter on grief because what they've learned is what happens in your soul happens in your cells. And if you push that thing down, it will push out into your physiology and get your attention another way. Nobody's exempt. You can't side skirt grief. And we all have losses to varying degrees, but everybody needs to work through the losses, the hurts, and the disappointments. Otherwise, it will come back, won't it?
Exactly. And we live in a fallen world, and it doesn't matter if you haven't experienced huge losses or even the losses that we'll talk about that I wrote about in our book. But like, you live in a fallen world. You're going to experience heartache on multiple levels. And it doesn't matter how intense or if you want to minimize your pain, we've all have experienced heartache and grief, and we have to honor it no matter the size.
Well, this is going to be a tough one. I mean, I cried through your book. It was raw, so beautiful, so important. But let's go. Let's do this. Tell us your story, Andrew.
Yeah. So, let's see, 7 years ago, we were anticipating the birth of our firstborn son. And my wife and I are very, how do you say this? Very expressive people. And so it must have been like, you know, the king was coming to our humble abode, right? The president was coming to visit us in our little, you know, basement apartment that we had at the time. But we were so anticipating. We were so full, so naive. Nothing could possibly go wrong. Everything was prepared. We were so excited. We would, you know, talk to our little boy in our belly, and our doctor had gone on vacation, and so we were going in for a checkup. We were a couple weeks late, and so we went in for a routine checkup, and we didn't hear a heartbeat. And, you know, I watched the doctor's face change, and I knew something was wrong, and I felt it in my gut. And she went and rushed and got another doctor, came in, and what we had found out is that the cord had wrapped around his neck, and we had lost him at 41 weeks. Mm. And that, you know, we fell to the ground. I mean, that destroyed us. I've never been so close to death in my life. And that began this journey of trying to make sense of something that's, you can't make sense of. You can't make sense of that type of evil. And the people that try to, you just fall short because we want to make sense. We want to have the question of why, right? We want to, in a sense, like answer that, and it's unanswerable. And so my journey of faith, my wife and I's journey, trying to make sense of God, trying to make sense. I mean, this is what this book kind of became. As we ended up closing our private counseling practices, traveled to Southeast Asia to just go on a journey, pilgrimage to try to find, because our culture is so so careless with grief.
Yeah.
The church is, I think, is even a bit worse of like, why aren't you better? Why aren't you? And yet for us, it was, I can't go on counseling if I don't have and tell people how to have a full heart and how to fully live, if I can't do that myself. Mm. And so I had to go away. I had to write. So every day we wrote, which is where that book came out of, which is why it's so raw, is because it was the first 4 months of the grieving process. And we really, that those words were lifelines to us. And we tried to read other books. We tried, you know, people gave us books and well-meaning Christian books, and I could only read one book at the time, and it was Nicholas Walterstorff's Lament for a Son. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but it was from the 80s, and it's his story of losing his son, and yet it was so honorable. It wrestled with faith in such an honest way, and I was like, why isn't there anything that I can read that I can actually feel comfort? Everything felt like it had too much joy or too much resolution when I wasn't in any place of resolution. I had just lost my son. There were no answers, and I didn't want answers. And so we began to try to just be very honest with our grief and feel the weight of it, knowing that in our crucifixion, we experienced resurrection. And we eventually were able to live again. We were eventually able to rebuild our private practices. We were able to function. We now have three beautiful children. Again, the pain is still there. It's just different now. But I'm able to function. I'm able to live a semi-normal life, even though I'm still a bit awkward. I can function. I can live. I can work. Mm. And yet I still have an ache, and that ache will never go away.
Right.
I still long for a relationship with my son, and I still grieve that he is not here. And yet, like, I can live because I honored the pain.
That's right. That is exactly right. His name was Jackson Brave Bauman. Love that name, and hence the clever title, A Brave Lament. I feel like it's real time. When you're reading this book, you're walking with you in real time, and you don't mince words. You're so – I love books like this that are raw and honest. And, okay, we're right up on the break. When we come back, here you're at the hospital, I believe, or the doctor's office when you – find out that he has no heartbeat. The very first thing you did was call your community, and you just said, Brave is dead. I want you to tell us on the other side how they assembled, what they did, what was helpful to you. And friends, I welcome your questions, comments. If you're maybe walking through a grief of a different kind, we welcome your questions, comments. I think it's just what Andrew said is the culture does a terrible job at helping people grieve. It's not a good culture for that. We want to change that. Want to get around you when you're sorting through your losses. Four copies of A Brave Lament to get into your hands. 877-933-2484. Back in a minute. Middays. I'm Susie Larson. I honestly feel like that song makes me want to cry. Talking to Andrew Bauman. He and his wife wrote the most raw, beautiful book I've ever seen on lament and grief. It's called A Brave Lament for Those Who Know Death. And you may know death of a child, of a loved one, a parent, a friend, or even a death of a dream. But we all walk through losses. And as Andrew said before the break, we don't have a culture that's conducive to healthy grief. And yet we need to know how to grieve so we can come back to joy again. And Andrew, before the break, you're telling the story of, I mean, you open your book with a letter to Brave, Jackson Brave Bauman, your son in your wife's womb, and you're getting ready. And you're overdue because I'm going to ask you about the doctor in just a moment. But the doctor goes on vacation right around the time of delivery. So I think it's a week after that little Brave's supposed to come into the world. You find out that his cord is around his neck and he's no longer living. You call your friends. Take it from there.
Yes. Yeah, we didn't know what to do, right? We were frozen. We were literally just frozen. And my wife, Christy, said, what do we do? And I said, call Ben. Well, Ben was our pastor at the time. And all we could say was, Brave is dead, and just, you know, screaming and wailing. And he said, come to Andy and Lisa's, which is a dear friend of ours. And we basically, we all live in the same neighborhood. We still do 7 years later. And we drove to their house, and all of a sudden, probably about five people had already gathered, and within an hour, 10 people. And for the next week, we used their house as a place of mourning. And Jewish culture has this practice called sitting Shiva, where they, a house of mourning, where they stay and grieve. And that's what it became for us. We had 2 days till we had needed to induce labor, and we just didn't know how we could possibly, you know, we didn't know how we could possibly do that, just that haunting. And so we just wept, and probably had about 40 or 50 people over the course of those few days just come by and just weep with us and grieve with us and weep with us. And that house just became this place of holding, this place of holding all these complex feelings, and yet gave us so much strength to be able to go into something that I didn't know was possible that we could do, especially for my wife. Just didn't know how she could be so strong. And what a confusing idea to give birth to death. What a conflictual thing of the most joyous time in our lives. It actually becomes the most painful. And so we go to the hospital and spend the next 18 hours in this process. And it was the most haunting, the most beautiful moment. We got to hold him for 12 hours. And he was so beautiful and so peaceful. And we baptized him, and our community came around us, and we all got to hold him. And it was just such a sacred moment of just honor, of honoring his short life and honoring his death. And And that carried on for the next 4 or 5 days, where we just ended up staying at our friend Andy and Lisa's house, and we just continued in that state of mourning for the funeral. And our community held us, and we document it more fully in our film. We have a documentary film also by the same name, A Brave Lament, and you can watch that for free on Amazon Prime, and that's available. But that documents more of the community, how our community carried us and held us, and literally, like, this is almost the only reason we were able to survive, because they became the very hands and feet of God to us. And it was a beautiful moment.
Wow. Praise God for community. It's why you need community, for one of the many reasons. But did you go through any time of blaming the doctor for, how would you sort through that? I'm just trying to imagine going, if you would have been here, or we would have picked up on something, how did you process that?
Yeah, no, they're still, she was incredible. She came to our home and met with us and went to the grave site. And, you know, she was incredibly kind. But, yeah, there's so many what ifs, right? I don't know how helpful those are. And yet it's still true. I still have those questions. I still, well, what if he didn't do that? What if he didn't do this? What if, you know, my wife wrestled for at least two years after, blaming herself and her body, of like, could she have known if she had known something? And I feel like that's how even the evil one, you know, spiritual warfare has attacked us. And that, you know, last year we gave birth to our fourth child, and the cord was around his neck, and my wife didn't feel him kicking. This was 33 weeks or so. And so she just went into the doctor because she was so aware, hypervigilant, you know. And so we've been to the doctor so many times because she's always nervous and scared. And yet this time it was because he was in trouble and we had to have an emergency C-section. And yet she's done those types of things out of fear and out of trauma. And so it feels like a place evil has really tried to destroy us and really tried to attack us in this place, because we've worked so hard to create life out of our pain. I feel like we've really undergone so many attacks in that very same place. And yet my son River, he survived, and now he's a beautiful, crazy little one-year-old who doesn't sleep.
Boy, the enemy really does fight dirty, doesn't he? I mean, and God is so with us in that vulnerable place, but the enemy does not, he fights so dirty. And I'm thinking of moms who've delivered babies very early and dealing with that. Maybe I cleaned the house, or I ate something I shouldn't have. And I need to tell you, Andrew, that our station has gone through, I don't know if I can talk about it. Our station has gone through a really big loss. One of our producers delivered at 26 weeks, and Gabriel lived for a month and he died last weekend. We are just like all reeling from like what just happened. And I don't even know this because I haven't seen my dear coworker. She's been obviously home, but I would wonder with something like this. I even know this with my sister who lost her husband. I should have fed him different. I should have done something different. I mean, how do you sort through all those things when really so much more power is in God's hands than ours? Than we think, do you know?
Well, I think it's very natural that it's an easy out. If I can find someone to villainize, whoever it is, I can villainize the doctor. I could villainize my wife. I could villainize myself. I just need to find a scapegoat so I don't have to feel the pain. And that's what we do. That's what we do. And I would encourage all of you, let's not make a villain. We don't have to have a villain. God's not bad. You're not bad. Like, let's just feel the pain. Let's just fully feel the weight of this and have the courage to grieve boldly and loudly, despite what the culture says, despite what the church says, and feel the weight of the loss, because that is going to get us through, rather than trying to blame someone, rather than trying to make a villain out of yourself. That's not going to get you anywhere.
Wow, I can sure imagine how that would be a strength drainer more than anything. Well, there is no rushing or sprinting through grief, is there?
No. Yeah, no, not at all. And it's unique for every person. And yet there's some basics, right? There's some basic guidelines. Yet there's no perfect path. Grief is fully unique, and that's okay. There's no right or wrong ways, and yet we do need to feel it. So what does that look like for you? You know, I know for us, we continually, every year at his birthday, we continually, we show this in our film, but continually have these rituals. You know, we light lanterns up in the sky, and we sing to him every year. And what do you do to continue to create rituals of meaning to continue to help you feel the weight of it, even years later? It's that important for the healing process to continue.
So, Andrew, we've got about 2 minutes to our hard break at the bottom, so you may need to continue this answer on the other side, but let's start with it here. But I've noticed something I don't quite understand, and I pray for grace as I try to unpack my question. But I noticed how some move through grief, even though it's messy, but they eventually find joy again, while others descend continually into a darkness that they never fully recover from, even years later, where they turn away from God, they turn away from their existing loved ones, and any sense of future hope and joy, where it really is there's a darkness over it that's no longer, it seems from the outside looking in, it doesn't have that sacredness. It feels like almost a demonic oppression that they're in such a deep place. Why is that, and why do you suppose that happens in some cases?
Yeah, that's a great question. There does seem to be a place where a lot of people are scared that they're going to get stuck, so they won't even go there at all. And yet, I truly believe, and I don't want to just kick a dead horse here, but like, if we can truly honor it and enter it into the crucifixion, there will be resurrection. How do you do that? How do you fully enter in? That is probably a longer conversation. But I do think there's a way that it can go sideways, you know, with addiction or with, you know, different even mental health disorders, developing, you know, my wife, if she were here, she would tell you all about it, developed all these panic attacks, you know, and yet we continue to stay in the truth. We continue to be rooted in what was real. And that helped us anchor us to get through these panic attacks for her. You're right. This is a very complex question, and there's so much there. There's so much there. It might take us an hour or two to unpack that.
Well, I'd love to hear more of your thoughts. And actually, my sister's joining us on the show next week to talk about her love, loss, and redemption. But I'll say it here for the person who needs to hear it. She said everybody grieves differently, but she says the four things that kind of were plumb lines for her is one, she said, I got out of bed every day. I just kept believing that God had a reason for me to get out of bed. She said, two, I refused to let God's goodness be up for grabs. And on my worst days, I just had to believe that he was good. And then she said, three is I kept telling myself, because Christ is in me, I'm stronger than I know. And because Christ is in me, I will somehow get through this. And that was just, I thought that was really beautiful. We got to pause here.
Totally.
Andrew, I want to hear on your side, on the other side, because as you say, you got to go to the depths of it. But there are some truths it seems you may need to hang on to, or maybe you just rely on the fact that he's hanging on to you. I want to know what that was like for you. Talking to Andrew Bauman, his wife, Christine, he wrote the book, A Brave Lament. We've got a few copies to give away. Text or email 877-933-2484 or email middays@myfaithradio.com.
Jesus, when you speak to me, I hope I'm listening to you.
Thanks for tuning in to Middays. I'm Susie Larson, having a powerful, very raw conversation with Andrew Bauman, who wrote a book along with his wife, Christy, called A Brave Lament for Those Who Know Death. Andrew and his wife, Christy, lost their son to stillbirth. The cord is wrapped around his neck. And this book is just a raw, honest, almost real-time document of how they walk through the grief process. And again, I want to affirm, maybe you lost a loved one. I got an email from a listener who said, we're estranged from our daughter who's cut us off. She withholds her sons from us, and we are grieving. We are brokenhearted. And that was my point completely, is that grief takes on many shapes and sizes, but we need to walk through it. And before the break, I asked a hard question, and I don't understand it. I sincerely want to understand it. Mm-hmm. I've lost loved ones, but I've not lost a husband or a child, and I think that's incredibly, I can't fathom it. But what I said was, how and why, what have you discerned or understood that why some even though they go to the depths, they emerge, like you were talking about, with some joy and some hope. And you're not the same, but you can function again, while others descend and continue on to a deeper darkness that moves from what feels like sacred lament to almost a demonic oppression, where they really, it's like they have other kids or other loved ones, and it doesn't matter because they're into such a deep, dark place. Have you discerned any common denominator in either of those situations?
Yeah, I mean, one thing that comes to my mind, and again, it's so unique. It's so unique to each person, so it's hard to give kind of like an overall general analysis. But I know for me, my anger had to be confronted specifically with God. I wrestled so much with my faith, and I knew I couldn't shortcut that. And so, you know, in part of the book, like, I rail against God. I yell at God, in such a weird position to be in, to need someone so much, to both need God and hate God simultaneously. It's such a weird thing to be so desperate and yet so angry, so furious. And I was so thankful that God was not insecure, you know, that God can handle my rage and be okay. Like, I needed a God that big. And I know for me, to help get me through it, I needed to curse. I needed to scream. I needed to wail. I needed to pray. I needed all those things that seemed contradictory. I needed to just fully human in all my complexities and know that God was big enough to bear that. And that's a huge part of what helped get me through. And yet people get stuck in different parts of the journey, of the healing journey. And yet it is so unique to that person. You know, I would have to have them in my office counseling, you know, to really explore, where are you getting stuck? What are you not fully entering into? And it could be that piece of anger. It could be that piece of, you know, they don't know why, and they're getting stuck in that part. But it is so unique.
One thing Craig Rochelle says is wrestle, but wrestle within the embrace. Go ahead and wrestle. Pound on his chest. And that's what you did, Andrew, is you wrestled within the embrace. And I wonder if that's the danger, is when you wrestle apart, where you shut your heart off from God altogether, saying, I don't want to hear what you have to say. I mean, you counted on God, and you felt let down by him. And what I love about that is that he can handle that, as you said. But wow, I think that's a great cautionary word, is wrestle. Go ahead, wrestle your heart out, but within the embrace.
Yes,
so like it was interesting to me, as you said, when friends and family brought your favorite things, like comfort foods and things like that, you had a hard time entering in because it felt like any moment of delight was a betrayal to your son. My sister said the same thing. Like, you know, she had to learn how to laugh again. And even when her heart was ready to laugh again, she thought, is it too soon to laugh? Am I betraying Donnie by laughing? And how did you sort through that?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's almost like relearning how to live. It's like learning how to live again. Is this okay that I'm experiencing joy? Am I supposed to be forever heartbroken? Am I supposed to? And the answer is like yes and no. Like there's a sense where I will forever feel the ache, and yet my boy wants me to live into his name, brave. Like I've got to live brave, and living brave is me learning to laugh again, me learning to experience joy again. There comes to a point where it becomes incredibly selfish if I no longer laugh, if I no longer experience joy. It's actually me not living, not being fully human and fully who God wants me to be.
You know, I've walked through some pretty hard stuff in my life, some trauma as a child at the hands of some teenage boys, and also some pretty significant and long-term health challenges. And I realized that for many years I was living bracing for impact, like on one hand enjoying a great intimacy with God, but there was this little something in me never fully trusting that the next shoe isn't about to drop. And it's not good for your soul or your body to live in that constant bracing for impact, you know? So it is something I have gone after with God, and I found myself just, I'm now in a season, I would say, this is an honest, raw admission, for the first time in my life, I'm not bracing for impact. But it wasn't through, I needed to contend and get to know the heart of God and wrestle through what these things have spoken to me. And Andrew, I was reading, I'm writing a devotional right now, and I was reading, I think it was Colossians, where Paul says, grace and peace to you. And I looked up the translation on peace. And, you know, in that particular verse in Colossians, what peace means was not fearing anything from God and being divinely content in one's lot. And I thought, that's profound to me as far as going, I'm not going to fear anything from God because I have an attachment to him and I trust him so much. And I'm divinely content even amidst some of my limitations. Again, I don't think you stumble there without some kind of contending with what is true and what's not in the midst of the stuff that's breaking my heart. I would love to know your thoughts.
Yes, yes. No, well said. I think that's like, is God still good, like in the midst of this? And obviously we wrestle with that. And yet I also had to take in consideration that the evil one is there to steal, kill, and destroy me.
Yeah.
Like, why am I confusing the work of evil for the work of God? And yet, will God use this for good? Of course. Like, God, of course. Would I ever choose it again? No, never. I would never choose that. And yet, God will always work things together for good. And yet, I believe it was an act of evil to try to kill me, to try to keep me away from this arena that I'm in right now, which is fighting for the life and death of people. Like, I'm on the front lines of this work, and my wife is as well. And he knew where to take us out. He knew where to attack us. And yet God is still good in the midst of that, and yet evil is still at work, and we have to hold both of those.
So true, so true. And I don't, you know, when I think about the people that I've lost, I for me, it's helped my soul to say, you know what, my time with them will exceed my time without them. You know, as painful and excruciating it is, I mean, like, you're going to be with Brave forever, you know? I mean, praise God for that. But still, there are no platitudes. In fact, you received an email from a friend who meant well but said, you will have other children, and here's a Bible verse.
Right.
I want you to talk about, you know, just honestly how that hit you.
Yeah. I experienced a few of those things where, again, well-intentioned and yet so unnecessarily painful to me at that moment. I needed people sitting with me without answers, sitting with me with nothing, because that's what I was feeling at the time. And yet, again, an email like that, or I remember a friend after I lost my son, he's in my wedding, and I was just like, where have you been? Like, 6 months later, and he's like, I didn't know what to say. And, you know, he's a pastor, and he's like, I had these things, to, you know, I was with you in these things, but I didn't want to hurt you, and I just didn't say anything. And it was just like, oh.
That hurt worse.
Like, in the moment, right, we can either be a fool or we can be a coward. And I would actually much rather, as a person who's suffering, I'd much rather you risk being foolish than you being a coward. And I can know, like, my worth more fully if you risk on my behalf, if you risk foolishness, if you say something wrong, or, like, I would rather you say something than nothing. And yet we do need to be – our hands need to be soft. We don't need to give answers and to accompany people who are in such heartache. It can just be harmful. Again, even though it's true I had other kids, I don't want to hear that at that moment. That's not helpful for me.
And they don't replace him.
I want you to just grieve with me. Yes, exactly. I want you to just be with me in the pain. Be with me in the heartache.
Another thing you noted that I'm sure, you know, getting texts and emails here, others, like one of our key listeners who's, we hear from, she's homebound. She's lost so much in relationships because she's young, very young to be homebound with a chronic illness, just lost where she lives. And there's so much loss in her life. And I'm sure she relates to this, but you talked about seeing social media posts of going, yay, he's here. And they're celebrating their new babies. And I noticed this too when I was in the depths of struggling with my health, curled up in a ball in a dark bedroom and seeing those same kind of posts, people just skating through life with their health and going, their blessing mocks my pain. You know, it's so, and I know I'm happy for you, but I'm sad for me. How did you sort through that when you do feel like an outsider? Because it seems everybody else goes through life unscathed.
Yeah, that type of grief makes you feel like an alien in this world. And so I like to equate it with, like, going through life with no skin on, right? So everything hurts. If anything touches, if someone blows on me wrong, it's going to hurt because I don't have any skin. I don't have any protection at that moment. And so what we had to do is we really had to hunker down. We really had to surround ourselves with really safe people. We really had to get off social media. We really had to, you know, leave the country. Like we really had to surround ourselves. And not everybody gets that privilege. I also know that we were able to get funds from family members and able to take care of us. And we were able to go and do that. But like, you have to surround yourself with people that, that are soft and caring and loving and don't try to fix you, but really work on trying to understand you, not fix you, not make you better, but really to just be with you. Hmm. And that includes church communities, you know?
Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. Well, the old adage, I know I'm going to hear you groan when I say this, God doesn't give you more than you can handle, is not actually in the Bible, contrary to what some people think. And people often reference that 1 Corinthians 10:13, but that verse is about temptation. God won't allow you to be tempted beyond what you're able. Because even Paul said he endured trials and hardship beyond what he could bear, if not for the grace of God. So I want you to talk about the danger of that platitude, because how do you tell a young woman in human trafficking, oh, well, God won't give you more than or you who've lost a son?
Yeah.
It's a terrible thing to say to someone who's walking through unimaginable pain. So speak to that.
Exactly. It can be so callous, right? It can be so callous. And yet, again, what does love look like for someone who has, whose basically world is over, right? For me, it's like, I didn't know how I was going to live another day. I was in the grave when my son died. Like, I felt like I was dead. What do you do? What do you say? There's actually not much you can say, right? There's not words. Words don't, that doesn't work. Those types of platitudes are so damaging. Rather than, will you sit next to me? Will you feel futile? Will you feel powerless? Will you feel these things that I'm feeling? And that's what we lose the art of accompaniment, and we don't know how to sit with those who are grieving because we don't want to feel those painful feelings. Hmm. I want to feel good that I'm helping you, that I'm fixing you, or that I'm, you know, I'll pray for you, or like I want to, and that makes it about me, not about the one who's suffering.
Yeah, I'm uncomfortable with what you're feeling, so you need to get through it. Well, that was going to be the next question. We got a break coming up in a few minutes, but here I want you to talk about when people tell you it's time to move on, or you get the sense from even some of your trusted friends, okay, you know, you're kind of lingering here a little bit long. What? How do you respond to that?
Yeah, I mean, it makes it even more complex when you feel like you have to teach those around you how to be with those who are grieving when you're the one who's suffering, right? And yet so many times you're pushed into that position of, I have to teach my friends how to love me. And that shouldn't be the case. We shouldn't put that burden on the one who's suffering. You should do the work now to learn how to become a safe, loving friend to those who are hurting.
Yeah. I'm going to pause here. When we come back, I want to talk about the part of your story when life started to come back for you and Christy, where you started to sense a breath of life, little flickers of hope, just a sense of the warmth of God's presence. And you thought, I'm going to survive this. Tell us about that when we return. Talking to Andrew Bauman, he and his wife Christy wrote really a raw, an amazing book. I think really, I had said at the outset, this show might not be for everybody. I changed my mind. It's for everybody. We need to know how to grieve our own losses and to walk with those who grieve as well. Title of the book is A Brave Lament for Those Who Know Death. Maybe you've experienced the death of a dream or a death of a loved one. God's with you. We love you. Don't rush through the process. We've got 4 copies. You can text or email to get in on the drawing, 877-933-2484, or email middays@myfaithradio.com. I'll be back in a minute. Kind of restraint it's taking me to hold back the tears as I'm reading some of these texts and emails come through and just listening to Andrew's story. This dear listener, oh, dear Lord, my sister's kindergartner was killed by a school bus when he got off of it many years ago. She had some of the worst comments said to her by Christians, including, you should be over this by now after only 10 months. Have mercy. Talking to Andrew Bauman about his amazing book, A Brave Lament. Boy, this is one of the most raw, beautiful books, really messy, poetically, beautifully written books on how to walk through loss and grief. 877-933-2484. You can text to get in on the drawing or email middays@myfaithradio.com. Before the break, Andrew, I asked you to tell me, when did the story turn? When did you and Christy start to think, we're smiling again? We feel a little bit of life rising up within us again.
Yeah, it was, we continued to try to stay present with our bodies and stay present with what we were feeling. That's why we were able to write every single day. We were traveling in Southeast Asia, and I felt this calling from God we needed to be with orphans, because we need to be with kids without parents, because we were parents without kids. And so we ended up in this Burmese refugee camp up on the border of Thailand and Burma, and sleeping on these corn husks. And we were asked to go teach in this little schoolhouse in the refugee camp. And we get to this little concrete building, these little kids there, and we look on the wall, and it says Brave with a capital B on the wall. And it's just like, and that week we were in that camp and we were working with those kids, and those kids just loved us and we just played and I laughed again. And that was the moment that we're like, we're going to be okay. Like, this is why we're here. This, you know, people with different faiths and different, it didn't matter. Like, it was just this deep love and this deep presence of God, that they didn't know our story and they didn't know why we were there. And yet we just loved on them, and something in our heart began to heal. And after 4 months of traveling, we were able to go back home and continue to have our support there in Seattle, and began to build our practices back up and continued to write. And at the time, 6 years ago, we had sent this book to 29, of the top Christian publishers, and they kept writing back, it doesn't have enough hope. Grief doesn't sell. These things over and over. And I was like, no, like that's exactly why. Like, you guys don't understand. People who are in this type of acute grief needed something to accompany them in that. And it doesn't need to have more hope, but yet they kept wanting that. Like, it needs more, and it doesn't. Like, again, reading this doesn't make you feel worse. It, there is hope, but it's in the death. It's in facing it that there's hope, which is a very different type of way of being.
Well, you dare not to rush through it. That's what's so amazing about it, you know?
And,
playing with the orphans, for friends who hopped on late, the reason the word Brave on the wall was so significant is because Andrew's son is Jackson Brave Bauman, who died a stillbirth with a cord around his neck, born a week or two after his actual due date. Unbelievable, really such a painful story. And yet you should see the text coming in, people just saying, I could listen to Andrew for hours. He's just speaking to my pain. And you really are ministering on so many levels to the pains and the losses of many. Andrew, so how much time passed before you had your next child? And how much did that trigger you? How did you process that? And Christy, too, carrying the child.
It was way quicker than we imagined. It happened fairly quick. So within a year, we were pregnant again, and it was rough. And Christy, I hope you get to speak with her. She actually has a new book coming out. It's called The Theology of the Womb, which talks about knowing God through the body of a woman. And she goes into a lot of that in regards to, you know, the birth and her body. But the trauma, it was rough. We were terrified that we would be stolen from again. And the anxiety was just through the roof. And even after he was born, Christy had to be with him all the time because we were just so scared to leave him alone. And so scared, like, it was something we had to really, and even still now, like, really have to begin to trust more fully that he is okay. My wife just went on a little getaway for girls' weekend birthday party or whatever, and right before we left, she just said, Wilder's learning how to swim. His name is Wilder. And she's just like, please be careful, like, because he's kind of swimming and kind of still not great at it. And I could just see there was something more behind that. Like, please be with him if you go swimming. Like, don't let him leave. Like, there's still this fear, and both of us feel it. And that's, I think, just think that's what trauma does. Yeah, trauma marks us. And that's okay. Can we be kinder? Am I going to get frustrated at my wife, which, again, I have multiple times. But, like, trauma marks us, and it marks us differently. Me as a man, it's going to mark my wife very differently because she bore in her body that death in such a more personal way than I could ever understand.
Hmm. What do you both know about God now that you didn't know before all this happened?
It's a great question. I feel like God is much more mysterious than I, growing up in the church, being a pastor, I had all the answers. I knew all the verses. I had memorized them all, many. And yet now, when life stops making sense, when my answers start crumbling, I feel like that's when God actually becomes more known. And yet, it's like God is more mystery, and yet God is much more real than I ever knew him before. Even though I know less, I feel like I know God more, which seems odd yet.
No, I think that's the beautiful paradox, isn't it? I mean, who wants to serve a God you can tidy up and tie up in a bow and put in a box? And he's so much more vast than we can imagine, yet so much more intimately near than we know. And what a profound mystery. Well, one of the things that Christy had written in the book was, I want sleepless nights. I want him to wake me up at night. I want to go have to feed him and have to sit with him. And I was thinking about, imagining that all the things that make most parents tired and maybe irritated, and not that you're human, so you're going to get tired and irritated, but I would imagine you treasure them more because you've known loss.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, I think we're very present with our kids in a way that we wouldn't have, you know, now that we have three kids, and like we're able to love in a much deeper way because we know death. We know death, and now we're able to love, which goes back to my original point that the deeper we grieve is the deeper we'll joy. I think it's same with love. The deeper we grieve, we only can grieve to the level in which we loved. And I loved my son so deeply that I need to grieve him to that same level. And that doesn't change, even though 7 years later, that grief and that love are connected.
You're right. Mourning requires a kindness to my fragility. Friends, hear this, especially if you're feeling like you're a kind of a smoldering wick right now. Mourning requires a kindness to my fragility. The world tells me to move on, but grief tells me to move in, lean in deeper, and make grief my friend. The paradox that few understand is that the only way out of grief is through it. I must listen to my body as it guides me in this time of heartache. One thing I watched as my mom grieved my dad was she knew when she needed a nap, and she knew when she needed people. And she was very self-aware. I don't want to be alone today, so I need people. One thing I noticed about what your story is about is even though you felt like you were pounding on God's chest, which is a normal, anger is a part of the grief process, you were part of community. And I would love for you to speak to the maybe a few dangers or cautions, maybe better, not to isolate. What are some other just cautionary advice for the person who's in the throes of it right now?
Yeah, to be with people who have courage that also know heartache, and that's not true for everyone. And if you watch our film, A Brave Lament, you'll really see the quality of people we have around us, and it's not normal. You know, most of our friends are pastors and therapists because we all went to the same graduate school, and so there's an awareness there that people watch our film and are like, how did you get friends like that? And it's like it's not normal, and yet. Those people exist. Those people, like, you don't have to do this alone, even if it's an online community. But people who aren't scared to suffer, who aren't scared to stare death in the face, and who aren't scared to take on God, and who aren't scared to, like, to truly feel the weight of what it means to be human, like, you do not have to be alone, and yet it's not easy.
Yeah. Andrew, I pray that you'll come back and talk more about your book, Stumbling Toward Wholeness. We are right up against the end here. We appreciate, love you. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
Hope you found some encouragement here today. A Brave Lament is the title of the book. The drawing will be open for a few more minutes, 877-933-2484. Meet you back here next time. Thanks for listening to this Middays with Suzy Larson podcast. These conversations are available because of listener support. You can make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link to spread the good news of the gospel and to grow the impact of Middays with Suzy Larson.